Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona, Friday, February 24th. Hello again, Orion Samuelson, and joined by Max Armstrong as we go over a very busy week on Wall Street and also a very busy week in the agricultural trade. And as Max can testify, it was a busy week for the farm equipment industry. The National Farm Machinery Show, a three-day event in Louisville, Kentucky. Talking to Max, he said crowds were immense and probably the biggest crowd he has seen at the Kentucky show in all the years he's been going to it. The other big show this week was the World Ag Expo, Tulare, California. That used to be a very big dairy show because Tulare is the headquarters of the dairy industry in the Golden State. They don't emphasize as much on cows anymore, but they certainly do when it comes to farm machinery. And another part of that show that they have retained is the World Championship Tractor Pulling Competition. That is in Louisville, Kentucky, and it will go into this evening. About $200,000 worth of prize money for the World Championship Tractor Pulling Contest. Well, let's take a look at Wall Street. Did things quiet down at all on Wall Street? Not very much, but at least the market went a different way than a week or so ago. The S&P 500 up marginally today to mark its biggest weekly increase in 5 years, although earlier gains evaporated after the indictment of Russians for meddling in the 2016 presidential election sent investors into defensive mode before a long weekend because the markets will be closed on Monday in observance of President's Day. Markets will be closed. A market correction sparked by inflation concerns earlier in February raised fears that a 9-year bull market had ended, but data on consumer prices and retail sales this week left investors less worried, returning the stock market to its upward trajectory. The Office of U.S. Special Counsel Robert Mueller charged 13 Russian nationals and 3 Russian companies accused of interfering with U.S. elections in an effort to support then-candidate Donald Trump. And the question that I've been asking ever since we got on this Russian investigation, if we do find them guilty, and we have, what do we do? Do we arrest Mr. Putin? Do we arrest the Russian government officials and put them in jail? I don't know. Maybe we'll find out that there is a plan to go on with the charge of the Russian nationals that have been found guilty. A strong fourth quarter reporting season and deep corporate tax cuts introduced this year have led analysts to increase their estimates for 2018 S&P 500 earnings growth to 19% from the 12% they were predicting in early January. The NASDAQ rose 5.3% for the week. That's its best week since December of 2011. The Dow rose 4.25% for the week, its strongest weekly gain since November of 2016. And the NASDAQ composite dropped about 0.25% to end at 72.39. And as we've been saying, the markets will be closed on Monday in observance of President's Day. And they are unlikely to return to the Capitol with unusually calm conditions seen last year, even though equities have already recovered more than half the ground lost in the recent sell-off, and traders have rapidly dialed down fear. Economic data out today painted a rosy picture. Home building increased to more than a one-year high in January, boosted by strong increases in the construction of single and multifamily housing units. A different report showed import prices jumped last month. The CBOE Volatility Index, VIX, known as Wall Street's fear gauge or fear factor, edged up to 19.4, but remained way off the 50-point level it hit during the peak of the sell-off. Coca-Cola up about 0.5% after the company reported better-than-expected profit and sales as it sold more teas, coffees, and vitamin water. Among the big decliners, Kraft Heinz, which dropped 2.75% after quarterly profit and sales missed analyst estimates. So that's pretty much what happened on Wall Street today. Now let's take a look at next week's four-day trading week to see what we're going to be looking at from the standpoint of reports and the standpoint of the government material. First of all, for the week ahead, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise Company scheduled to report first quarter results on Thursday. The company's chief executive, Meg Whitman, surprised Wall Street last quarter by stepping down as CEO. And Hewlett-Packard is expected to report a fall in revenue and profit, hurt by continued lower sales for its mandatory activity in the marketplace with technology. And as we look ahead to next week, well, here's what's going on. Federal Open Market Committee scheduled to release the minutes from its January policy meeting on Wednesday, while a bunch of Federal Reserve officials are set to speak across the country at different levels and different events. Friday, Federal Reserve Bank of New York President William Dudley and Federal Reserve Bank of Boston President Eric Rosengren participate in a panel to discuss a U.S. Monetary Policy Forum report on the Federal Reserve balance sheet at the 2018 U.S. Monetary Policy Forum at the University of Chicago Booth School of Business. Monsanto will be in the news next week. It will participate at the same event in panel, a review of the objectives for monetary policy. That's President Loretta Meester who will participate in that event. Quiet week ahead with only existing home sales and weekly jobless claims, the main economic report scheduled for release. The National Association of Realtors expected to report on Wednesday that existing home sales went up 0.8% to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 5.6 million units in January. Data from the Labor Department on Thursday will likely show that initial claims for state unemployment benefits were unchanged at a seasonally adjusted 230,000 for the week ended February 17th. Dish Network Corporation expected to report a drop in fourth quarter revenue and profit on Wednesday, hurt by fewer than expected pay TV subscribers. The company struggles with the growing trend of cord cutting, where subscribers are dropping their TV packages for cheaper online streaming services such as Netflix. Newmont Mining Corporation expected to report a higher fourth quarter profit on Thursday, helped by lower costs. GoDaddy Inc., the company which provides marketplace to buy domain names, likely to report an increase in revenue and profit, helped by an expanded customer base and recent acquisitions. Analysts and investors will be on the lookout for fourth quarter guidance. Now, let me get back to the story I touched on briefly at the beginning. That's the Monsanto story. And Monsanto is going to continue to have to go ahead with its lawsuit in court. So Monsanto lost a bid to stop Arkansas's ban on farm chemicals. An Arkansas judge today dismissed a Monsanto lawsuit aiming to stop the state of Arkansas from blocking the use of a controversial farm chemical the company makes that deals a blow to its attempts to increase sales of genetically engineered seeds. Monsanto, which is being acquired by Bayer, filed the lawsuit last year in a bid to halt the state's ban on spraying of the weed killer known as dicamba from the period spanning April 16 to October 31st. Growers across the U.S. Farm Belt said last summer that dicamba drifted away from where it was sprayed, damaging millions of acres of crops that could not tolerate the herbicides. And then there's another group that is apparently settling a lawsuit in agriculture. U.S. grain merchant Archer Daniels Midland has settled a lawsuit with Syngenta over the seed company's launch of a biotech corn strain that rolled and roiled grain exports to China. ADM sued Syngenta 4 years ago for selling the corn variety known as AgriSure Viptera, or MIR-162, before it was approved for import by China. And that country, of course, is an importer of grain. Well, there's more to talk about. And Max Armstrong is going to sit down with Clayton Pope when we continue on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Our guest this weekend, Clayton Pope. Clayton Pope Commodities, Champaign, Illinois, and other locations across America. Welcome back in here, sir.
Great to be back.
Well, things have gotten a little more interesting in recent days. Is it all because of Argentina?
No, I don't think so. There's a lot of things going on. I mean, obviously, the stock market has been going nuts. And, you know, it seems like a month ago, everybody was lamenting to the fact there was just no volatility anywhere. Then all of a sudden, the VIX had the biggest one-day explosion in history. And, volatility, I think, kind of emanated from there into all the other sectors as well. But then, like you said, the grains have got the added influence of some real questionable production levels now in South America.
Volatility. Some people wring their hands over it and they say, oh, it's a terrible thing, but it does present opportunities, doesn't it?
It sure does, yeah. I mean, these markets wouldn't be what they are without it, that's for sure.
Let's talk a little more about Argentina. How far down the road are we there in terms of wrecking the corn crop in Brazil?
Well, corn and beans, I mean, there's all kinds of comparisons, you know, what month is it there compared to the states and that kind of thing. And the thing is, the Argentina and Brazil, it's really hard to just, like, put it all in one lump word, you know. Like, it is June or it is July or whatever, just because the whole growing geographical area is so far, you know, widely dispersed from north to south. But I'd say Argentina is pretty much in the July stage right now. They're probably a couple weeks from flowering there, and it's a critical period. It's a bad time to be extremely dry with little rain on the forecast.
And corn is hurting there.
Corn is hurting. It doesn't seem to be as influential in the world market as of course, Argentina's soybeans, mainly because of their status as the biggest meal exporter. But yeah, I think the corn's taken a little bit of a hit, too. I believe the USDA lowered that by 3 million metric tons in the last report. So this dryness isn't helping either crop.
Corn planting of that safrinha crop in Brazil That window of opportunity is almost past, isn't it?
The door is approaching, I guess. It's certainly not shut yet, but the latest numbers, I would guess, is probably something like 20% planted, and they've got time. But, you know, they're definitely going to be, you know, be like us. The later it gets here, the more it makes future weather that much more critical, and the market will be responsive to it accordingly. But the acreage is already going to be down a fair amount, and, you know, the latest buzz is it's going to be down a little bit more. I guess Dr. Michael Cordonier came out this morning. I was just reading before I came here, as he lowered his Brazilian corn number to 88 million metric tons, which isn't a shot to the market. Coneb came up with that number about a week ago. This is a Brazilian consulting firm, and so that's not a shock, but that's 7 million metric tons lower than the USDA, so it's a significant number.
Has this movement of the corn price perhaps encouraged some of those corn producers in Brazil to stretch that window a little bit? In other words, might some of them roll the planters, and perhaps 10 days, 2 weeks ago, they were thinking, oh, we'll get it wrapped up here.
No, absolutely. I mean, I don't think there's any question that that would be the case. Where if it was a marginal proposition and they're looking at nothing but red ink, obviously it's hard to get too excited about that. But, you know, you get right down to it, farmers want to farm. And I think it'd be really very unlikely that the acres won't get planted. I think it's just it will be down a little bit from a year ago. But like I said, it makes the future conditions that much more critical.
There are always those problems in terms of transport issues for a day or two and strikes for a day or two. Those have been insignificant, have they not?
They have. You know, it's fun. I've been in this business such a long time. I just kind of roll my eyes when I, you know, see this every year. Oh, gosh.
Every year.
Surprise, surprise.
The conveyor belt catches on fire at some elevator, or the truckers are striking, or the roads are muddy every year.
That's right. And it's kind of the same as here. Every year when you have a bear market in the U.S., in the corn market, you know, lo and behold, when everybody's really down in the dumps in September, you know, the stories start popping up about, you know, what kind of damage an early frost is going to, you know, bring on. So, I mean, certain things you can count on happening, or stories start, you know, coming up. But, yeah, I don't think the strikes down there really have any impact.
Since you're sort of leading me this direction, let me ask you about weekly crop bulletins when they start coming out in the spring. After what we saw with the 2017 crop, and the condition ratings that we saw in 2017, and yet those amazing corn yields coming off the combine, how much attention will guys like you pay to those weekly crop progress and condition reports this year? Will they matter?
Oh, you bet they'll matter. I mean, everybody's going to take them with a grain of salt and kind of roll their eyes and complain about how unreliable they are and so forth. But you get right down to it, it's a very vital source of information. All the people in my position and in the Twitter's world and all that are certainly going to be reporting it. And it's the best we've got. And I think, you know, maybe it'll be looked at a little bit differently instead of just like the blanket overall numbers. You know, people will be looking at a change in 1 week versus the previous week. And I think, you know, looking at it that way as opposed to like the whole national number compared to a year ago national number when you had very possibly a whole different set of people out there compiling it and so forth. I think, you know, if you look at the data a little bit closer and read into the numbers a little deeper, I think it's still going to serve a purpose in the market. And there's no question people will look at it. I mean, look at the wheat ratings that are already coming out now. I mean, again, people are kind of scratching their heads. How could anybody fall for this again? But on the other hand, it's one of the few indicators we have that is, you know, tangible and something that can be compared to other data feeds.
Will they still move the market, Clayton?
Oh, yeah. I think so. No doubt. I mean, like I said, it's to some extent, it's the best we've got. I mean, what's the alternative? You know, you can listen to just this chorus of voices that you hear, you know, on the comments section on any story on the internet or in Twitter or whatever. You know, there's, you know, thousands of comments from various producers. I mean, that's no reliable source either. So I think, yeah, it's like I said, it's the best we've got.
You know, a friend of mine the other day compared Twitter to the coffee shop. I don't think he meant it the way I took it, because I remember those coffee shops of the 80s, and it was one of the worst places to be. You did not want to be in the coffee shop in 1983 or 84, because you were going to come out of there feeling the worst that you could possibly feel. And it was always a case of, hey, I can top that bad news, pal. You know, and I think we're kind of in that era. This is the new coffee shop.
Oh, that's a great comparison. I hadn't thought about it like that, but that's right on, I think. But it's a good source of, I mean, there's a lot of factual information on there, good charts, tables, and so forth. But, yeah, sometimes you got to separate all the opinions and, you know, people love to exaggerate, no doubt about that.
I tell people to be careful who you follow. Pick a good basket, if you will, of reputable individuals whose knowledge you admire, and just follow them. You don't have to tweet yourself as a grower. I always tell older farmers who are putting their toe in the water.
You just be a stalker.
That's right.
You just be
exactly.
a reader. But, well, I do have to say, I don't want to give this blanket endorsement of Twitter. It is, bar none, the biggest time waster in my day. I mean, there's some good information out there. There's some pearls you can find amongst a lot of garbage. So I guess I'd caution anybody that's considering becoming a Twitter participant, be careful. It's a real eater-upper of your time.
I will try to limit future postings of my granddaughter's pictures.
Yeah, it's like or Abe Lincoln facts.
Yeah. So what are farmers doing with this bump up that we've seen in prices? Are they moving some grain here?
Oh, yeah, I think they definitely are. I think, for one thing, it's happening, oddly enough, with the strength we've seen in the corn market, we're still seeing some really firm basis levels. It seems like a lot of commercials out there are really wanting to secure corn. That's probably tied into the fact that now we've got our work cut out for us to hit the export projection of USDA. And amazingly, they raised it $125 million in the last report, which I'm really skeptical of that, but if they're right on that, there's a lot of corn that's got to be originated in the country if we're going to even come close to that export number. So that's really good news, I think.
The lower value of the dollar, that can't hurt, can it?
Can't hurt, but I think in general, as far as like day-to-day market analysis, it's probably overplayed as a market influence. But
would USDA have been considering that in adjusting that number a bit on exports?
Oh, yeah, I'd have to think it would be part of their model, but I don't think it would be a real big part. Frankly, I think it's probably more a reflection of what they're looking at in South America production.
If these prices that we are seeing here were to continue or to continue to gain a little bit, would this change planting ideas at all this spring?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think it already has. A month ago or 2 months ago, you know, it was a foregone conclusion. You're going to see a huge shift from corn to beans. With all the talk, you know, you're going to see a bean acreage number higher than the corn acreage number and so forth. And I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case by a small degree. But I think this corn strength, even though we're seeing bean strength too, the corn strength, I think, no question, is bringing more corn back into production.
Especially for our growers who like to plant corn.
That's the thing.
We have a lot of those folks.
That's right. Now, some of the fringe areas where, you know, corn yields are a little more marginal and so forth might be a different story. But I think, you know, in the core of the U.S. growing area, like you said, they generally have a bias and prefer to plant corn, and this will kind of assure that.
We know how quickly weather can turn and how quickly we can replenish soil moisture, but that weekly crop drought monitor map, if you look at the geography and you look at the percent of the 48 adjacent states, at least some degree dry or in drought, it's a little bit impressive, especially compared to a year ago at this time.
It is, yeah. It's
Is some of this rally predicated on that at all, Clayton?
Well, mainly from the standpoint that I think it's really helped the wheat market. I don't think it's contributed a lot directly to the corn and soybean markets, other than, you know, obviously there's a huge relationship between wheat and corn. So with the wheat problems we're having, and that's where the drought is the most intense, there's no question that's played a big part in the wheat strength, both SRW and HRW. So I think that's certainly spilled over into corn. But I don't think it's a real factor yet for corn and beans directly, just because, I mean, we get a wet spring, and that can change real fast.
And the eastern corn belt is not in drought. Now, if you think of Indiana and Ohio, they're showing up in good shape on all those maps, as I recall.
Seem to be, yeah, relatively anyway.
But anybody who recalls some droughts of the past can remember some that started early. You know, some of the really pop out in our minds.
Well, 88, of course, the granddaddy of them all, and you know, it's pretty amazing. You look back at that thing, and the rally started, you know, real early, like now. back then, and in the same kind of thing. There were big moisture deficits way before it even got planted. And so, you know, by the time we got into the nitty-gritty of the summer, I mean, the whole thing peaked out relatively early, as a matter of fact, but that's what these markets do. They anticipate and try to factor those kind of variables in.
Thanks for sharing the thoughts with us this weekend. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Clayton Pope, Clayton Pope Commodities. ClaytonPopeCommodities.com, right?
That's right.
We'll see you again sometime.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Weather continued to be a factor in the grain market this week because soybean and soybean meal futures moved higher today, holding strong gains from this week as forecast rain in Argentina was seen as too little to relieve drought in the big soybean exporting country. Corn was almost unchanged, consolidating below a six-month high hit on Thursday. That was linked to strong export demand and the Argentine weather concerns. Wheat was lower as it also held below a six-month top this week. Forecasts for some rain in winter wheat country in the U.S. easing drought worries. And a bounce in the dollar after a three-year low earlier in the day against a basket of currencies also encourage prices to consolidate. And so at the end of the day, the March wheat contract down 3¾ cents, the March corn contract down 367½ a bushel, the March soybean contract down 3 cents, $10.21½ a bushel, and all of the soybean months through November are trading above $10. Now, what about the livestock market at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange? Cattle futures rallied on a stronger cash market in the plains. And as a result, we saw cattle futures climbing to fresh three-month highs. Tighter supplies of market-ready cattle on feedlot show lists this week helped to support the cash market, and then trading later developed near the futures market close. Feedlot cattle traded in Kansas and Texas at $129 to $130 per hundredweight. That's up from $125 to $126. A week earlier. And what about the hog market? Well, the hog market tended to move lower by 41 cents per hundredweight in today's trade. That's pretty much it for our time. Thank you for joining us. Max Armstrong, along with Orion Samuelson, on the market, sponsored by the CME Group.